This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This is Talking Out Loud, the number one podcast on the internet for Dayton Flyers basketball. Always wearing red and being loud.
Hey, here come the Flyers. Hey, here come the Flyers. Hey.
And welcome back to another edition of Talking Out Loud. Folks, it's a monumentous occasion in our country. People were crying out in the streets, waiting on bated breath on what would happen, and that's right. Malachi Smith did return to the basketball floor on Saturday after two very, very long years. Congratulations to Mally. Welcome back, Mally. I am your host, Drew, joined, as always, by my compatriot, Sully. Sully, how are we doing on this fine afternoon?
I thought that you were going to say that the monumentous event is Dayton hosting a team worth a shit in the non-con, because that is a monumentous event that happens like once every 7 years. It's happening about as frequently as presidential elections right now. So
that is the truth, with Northwestern coming to town on Saturday, coming to UD Arena for a tilt. But there was a game on Monday, on the big opening night of college basketball. That's where I'm going to start, Sully. Question for you. How do you feel about this new idea of college, like almost every major college basketball season starting on the same exact night?
To be honest with you, number one. Number two, I kind of wish that we would do that 24-hour tournament again. If you remember, you know, years ago, it got kind of funky in the middle of the night because you had to have like one team that woke up at like 6 a.m. and played in the East, because, you know, Hawaii can only tide you over so long as the clock flips there. So there was always that weird portion in the morning. But then if you got through those games with like the 6 a.m. and the 8 a.m. games, those were super weird. I'm sure the people, I think one time they did them at like Cornell or the Ivy League. And I'm sure it's cool for like students only. But then, you know, 10 o'clock, noon Eastern, you're basically right into what we got this year, which was nonstop basketball from 11:30 in the morning until maybe 2 o'clock at night, 1:30. That Baylor Gonzaga game finished up late. I turned that one off at halftime because the result was never going to be in doubt if you watched the first half of that game. But, you know, I'm a big fan of it. I think everybody should start on the same day. I'm on record saying that the season starts far too early. We don't have to get into that. I mean, I would really much rather have the season start, say, you know, Thanksgiving week before those tournaments go off. But it's a great thing for college basketball. And frankly, having it in the middle of the week is good, because it just kind of signifies to all of those, let's say, 50-50 fans that the season has started. So net positive for everybody from where I'm sitting.
Yeah, I pretty much concur with everything you just said there. I think it is a pretty cool thing where you look at the docket on a Monday night and you see pretty much every major program is playing. Granted, a lot of them are playing stinkers. You know, obviously we had the Baylor Gonzaga, which oddly enough turned out to be an absolute stinker if you stayed up to watch that game. Baylor probably going to make the second weekend of the tournament yet again. Ho-hum for them. But our beloved Dayton Flyers opened their season on Monday night with a win against St. Francis from Pennsylvania. Sully, very familiar with St. Francis from Pennsylvania. Were they good? No. How I would describe them, they were a very good Division I high school basketball team. But this was the first opportunity we had to see our Dayton Flyers in action. Some new pieces around, some new figures, as I mentioned in the open, Mally's return. Sully, first things first, obviously there aren't many macro takeaways we can take from this game on where Dayton is going to go. We'll learn more a lot about that on Saturday night. But from what you watched, what did you like?
What I liked was seeing Mally back first and foremost. Yes. And contributing, because I think we said that the big thing this year is what do we get from him, right? I kind of think the team, I walked away from night one thinking that maybe his best role on this team would be first guy off the bench. I think it makes logical sense when you look at the pieces that we have. And because he's a veteran who's been there, done that, and played, what's he probably played, 35, 40-ish games now.
Yep.
He is a been there, done that kind of guy. And so I took that as a huge positive. But then on the other side of things, as we said, we got to get the rotation kind of narrowed down quickly here because they cycled through nine guys. June Simon, doesn't look like we're going to see too much of him. If you're not getting burned on night one, that's kind of it for that discussion. And then obviously Marvell Allen went down for the year. So you got nine guys right now that got some serious minutes, Hamad Musa being the least of the which. But I think that's key. Like, it's going to keep being key is, like, who is going to give us production night in, night out? And how do we get from nine guys down to seven or eight? And maybe that ninth guy is just some extra cushion. But the takeaways were that Dayton did the business that they needed to do. When you win 30 points on night one, that's generally what the doctor ordered to get the season started. So it's a job well done, and you won't look into it for too many more reasons than that. If I could say any more reason for pause, and this is going to be, I think, a recurring theme with this team, is just that the jacking up threes is going to bury them a couple of times this year. There's no doubt about it. It finished the game 8 for 32, 3 for 10 from Bennett. Posh Alexander and Santos combined for 0 for 8. There's going to be a lot of nights like that, I'm afraid, because we're going to get deep in the shot clock and they're going to rely on the three too much. And a lot of nights it's not going to be falling. So I would say if we take one great takeaway, is that Mally's going to be a key piece. The bad takeaway is if we have to live and die by the three at all this year, it's not going to go well for us.
Yeah, and we were really chucking early. I mean, the first 10 minutes of the game, I don't know how many we shot, but it felt like the majority of them. It felt like after the first 10 minutes or so, they kind of made more of a conscious effort to get the ball into the paint, get better shots, work it inside to Zed Key. Felt like we didn't rely on the three nearly as much in the second half. Jacob Connor came off, and you know, as you mentioned, we were 8 for 32. If you take away Jacob Connor's 3 of 6 and Javon Bennett's 3 of 10, you know, there's only two other makes in there. One was from Mally at the end of the shot clock, and one was by Enoch Cheeks, the very first shot of the year. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call us a sharp shooting basketball team as of now. But what I was encouraged about is that they didn't just run, you know, they didn't just continue to chuck it when they weren't going in early. And, you know, 32, three, they ended up with 32. I would have thought it was going to be a whole lot more with how often they were hoisting that thing early. Another positive takeaway for me was the play of Zed Key. I think he's the perfect kind of guy, you know. He isn't Daron Holmes. We're not asking him to be Daron Holmes, but he does feel like he can be that down low presence defensively. He grabbed 6 rebounds. He was 4 of 4 from the field. He was 6 of 8 from the line. He had 3 block shots. He ran the floor well, had a couple dunks. He's an absolute maniac on the court, which I adore. I love that about him. He was raising, you know, a dunk. He's flailing his arms around. He's throwing his hands up in the air every time he dunks the ball back, like Mike Sell used to do back in the day whenever he got one. So I really think he's going to be a big pickup. And, you know, Posh Alexander, you look at his box score and it doesn't really jump out to you. You know, only 3 of 8 from the field, 7 points, 5 assists, only 1 turnover. But I just thought the way he moves, the way he sees the game, the way he reacts to what's happening to him on the floor defensively, he's very good. I think he will be a nice calming presence for Dayton as well. And that leads me to my other point, is that I do think this team is going to be legit on defense. I think almost everybody you bring in, even off the bench, you've got some good defenders, some plus defenders and then good defenders.
They have to be.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. And they know that, and that's good, because if we couldn't defend, there wouldn't be a whole hell of a lot to talk about on the show. But the good news is it looks like that they'll be able to, and they also played with a little more pace than I was seeing an Anthony Grant team, you know, usually play. They weren't Loyola Marymount by any stretch, but I thought they did a good job of pushing the pace when necessary and got some easy ones.
Yeah, and you said it. It's like, I'm not going to take shit away from this first game besides, you know, let's get some of the dust off, right? And just play a game against a real team. That's all it is. The scrimmages are tough because they don't count. So, you know, how hard are guys going? Are we putting the best lineups in? You never know. And then night one, you know, I'm always just a huge advocate of those bye games where teams have to come in, take their medicine, and go home with an L, well-fed. So, yeah, you know, we can close the book on a 30-point win, did what they had to do. Got to look out for the three-point shooting. It's going to be a problem this year, but defensively, that's who this team's going to be, and that's what we knew. You know that an anti-Grant team is going to defend well. They'll probably slow you down. They're going to want to get in a race to 60 and probably shoot too many threes. So all indicative of things that we already knew of previous AG teams.
That is correct. So that closes the book on St. Francis. We look forward to the Chicagoites from Northwestern. Chicagoans from Northwestern coming to town. Obviously, last year, Dayton lost a very, very close one to them early on in the year at Northwestern. This is their return trip to UD Arena on Saturday night. As we mentioned, probably first time in a while we've had a worth-a-crap non-con game at home. I think the last one I can really remember was SMU a couple years ago.
If you want to count that.
You know, I'm just, I know they're an ACC team now, technically, because of course they are. You know, they'll be playing Cal in ACC play this regular season, but that's neither here nor there. But Northwestern comes in. They beat Lehigh 90-46 on Monday night. They shot 9 of 20 from 3. Boo Weekly's 9 years of eligibility have run out. He is gone.
Boo Booey.
Whole new cast of characters for Northwestern roll into town. Sully, do you know anything about this Northwestern squad? And of what you do know, what can you tell us about them?
No, and I kind of like it because if you remember last year's Northwestern team that clipped Dayton by 5 early on in the year, same thing, it was the 10th of November, so we're just running it back pretty much on the same day. They were pretty much all seniors, Boo Booey and Tyler Berry and Nicholson, and the guy that killed us that night was Langborg. And those guys were all seniors, so they're all gone. They have a completely new roster. I'm sure Northwestern fans don't even know what to expect. So, you know, you kind of have to trust the betting lines on this one. And right now, early, obviously, show being recorded on Wednesday, KenPom has Dayton at a 4-point favorite to win this one. Now, if you're new at home on the betting lines, Dayton usually is going to get 2 to 3 points when they're at home, no matter what. So that tells me that this game is probably pretty close to a pick 'em, and then Dayton's going to get the benefit of the doubt with the 3 extra points on the home floor. We'll see how that plays out, you know, when the betting lines actually come out. But right now, it really is a crapshoot. I mean, we could get throttled, or Dayton could win this game by 25. It could go down to the buzzer. So it kind of goes back to what we said last week, is this is kind of like the exciting thing about college basketball now, at least in the first couple weeks of the year, is that, think about in previous years, you kind of know who the team is, what the expectations are, how they're going to play. And, you know, in the case of Northwestern, we had a pretty good idea for a number of years, like who Northwestern was, who their talent was. And if you remember, like going as far back as even the last Scoochie year, when they played Dayton at the United Center, you know, that team had Vic Law, who was there for a couple of years, and they had Lumpkin, who was there. So what I'm saying is, you even kind of knew some of the teams you would play against because those guys would be there for a few years. You're like, all right, I got a key on this guy or that guy. But yeah, we're kind of in uncharted territory, right? We don't really know what we're going to get from Northwestern, and we're still trying to feel out this Dayton team. So I think my message is going to kind of be consistent here in the Novembers moving forward, is like, kind of enjoy the unknown, because we get to go in eyes wide open. And if Dayton gets their doors blown off, we'll know we have some problems. Alternatively, if they win a tight one and it's an exciting night, you know that this team actually has some juice and not just beating St. Francis by 30. Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that does, you know, the idea of the unknown here with both us and Northwestern. I think Northwestern's probably looking at Dayton and go, okay, you know, they've got Santos and Bennett back, but and Cheeks, but
you know who Posh is. You've seen him before, probably. You know?
Right. You know, they might have some inkling of an idea of what it's going to be like, but you're right. Like, I don't think either team can really go back to last year's tape and be like, okay, this is what they did to us last year. It's like, this is a whole new cast of characters on both sides of the ball there. So it's an interesting matchup. It's a good one. You know, I think this will be the final year of it. I can't imagine that they would extend the contract, but it's one that, like, I kind of wouldn't hate, you know, maybe take a year off or two and then maybe call them back and be like, yeah, this worked out pretty well for both of us. Why don't we rekindle this one? But, you know, we'll leave that there. If there's one area in this basketball game that you think Dayton needs to do well in order to translate to it being a win, what would that area be in your opinion?
It's the obvious one. It's the 3-point shooting, right? Yep. You know, I can tell Flyer fans, as I'm looking down earlier today from the report card on Northwestern, they have experience in their roster too. They start two seniors and two juniors in their starting lineup, or at least they did in night one. So they're kind of following the same blueprint as Dayton, is they reloaded with veteran dudes on the transfer market. So yeah, it's going to be, I mean, I think, you know, I'm treating Northwestern the same way that they would treat us. I know what Chris Collins' teams have looked like historically. They're also playing pretty slow, but they also play very efficient, and they don't turn the ball over a lot. And so I think for Flyer fans, it's not really worth it to get into the Jimmys and Joes, so to speak, but it's better probably at this point in the year to look at who are Chris Collins' teams. And what I just mentioned, they play slow like AG teams. They don't turn the ball over a lot. And historically, they haven't been great at shooting. That's a Northwestern team, which tells me what? It's going to be low scoring. It'll be slow. It'll be a race to 65. And that's pretty much what the last couple of games against Northwestern have been. Last year, what was the final? 71-66. So I think it'll probably be something around there. Final in the 60s for both teams. Because like we said, AG has his tendencies. So does Chris Collins.
Yep, that's right. And just kind of taking a look at their team stats from their first game, they only took 14 free throws. They grabbed 45 boards. Lehigh was getting shots up. They weren't making any, but they were getting shots up. So they had 45 boards. As you mentioned, they don't turn the ball over very much. They only had 8. They forced 12. They scored 23 points off of those turnovers, though. So, you know, a lot of their turnovers forced led to easy baskets. It looks like only 13 fast break points, 36 in the paint. They did have 18 fouls, and they led by 50 at one point, which, you know, good for them for leading by 50 over Lehigh.
That tells you how much you can take away from that game.
Right, exactly. You know? So that's kind of where, again, we'll know a lot more about both our team and Northwestern after Saturday. You know, it should be a good one. The juice in the building was, you know, it was there on Monday. You know, opening night, it's always kind of there, but a Saturday evening at the old barn with a Big Ten squad coming in, place should be plenty lubricated and ready to go come let's get ready to rumble playing in the arena.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity, right? Like, we talk about this every single year that we finally are blessed with some great non-con matchups, and this is one of them, right? And it's kind of a litmus test more than anything, because you know you're going to have to play some really tough teams out in Maui. So I think you're going to come away with two different things. One, you're going to say, okay, Dayton won this game, or they played a tough game, and hey, they'll be able to handle people in Maui. Or, you know, they'll get whooped and you'll be like, man, we got some things to work on, right? Which is okay, because they play three games before they go to Maui. So they will have time to get some things fixed if this one doesn't go their way. But it is, I don't want to say a must win, but it's a game that'll hurt Dayton down the road if they lose. And that's stating the obvious, but it's probably a bigger game for Northwestern than it is for Dayton, if we're being honest.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And as you stated, between this game on Saturday and your game against North Carolina and Maui, you have Ball State, Capital, and New Mexico State. So those are all three teams where you can, you know, as they call it, get right if need be. Or if you win on Saturday, you just kind of parlay that momentum right through those three games and into the matchup with North Carolina, and you just kind of let it all hang out right there. And that's, you know, a game with North Carolina, who's currently ranked number 9 in the country, doesn't sink you if you lose it. As we stated in the preview episode, losing to North Carolina, there's no shame in that. But boy, if you can just find a way, and you know, Dayton has, they've played similarly rated teams out in Maui and have found a way. You win that one, then all of a sudden we're full steam ahead for the rest of the season. So, Sully, you said you had some trivia for me. What do you got?
Trivia smack in the middle of the show. I do. It's population-based trivia.
Okay.
Because we have been filming this on Wednesday, November 6th, and last night, you know, I got really inspired with those people that on CNN and whatnot, and they have the magic board, and they're clicking through all the counties, you know, like, here's who lives here. And yeah.
Yep.
So guys like me like geography. I'm all about that kind of stuff. So the name of the game in trivia tonight is Counties versus States, and it's going to be regionally based, given all of our fans around Dayton, Ohio, and myself living in Pittsburgh. The first one is, and we're going to, here's the question, which has the larger population? And I'm going to list off the counties that are specific to Dayton, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh, and then I'll list off four corresponding states. And your job, Drew, is to tell me which has a larger population. Are you ready?
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
I'm ready.
All right. First one. Who has the larger population? Montgomery County, Ohio, where Dayton is located, or the state of Wyoming?
I'm going to say the state of Wyoming.
That's right. You're one for one. Next question. Hamilton County, Cincinnati. Which one is larger? Hamilton County or North Dakota?
I'm going to say Hamilton County.
You're two for two. Third one, Cuyahoga County and the state of Maine. Which one has a higher population?
Cuyahoga.
You're wrong. The state of Maine by 100,000 people.
Maine does last probably one, have more people.
Allegheny County, where Pittsburgh is, state of Montana. Which one has a larger population?
Allegheny.
It does. It does. The county of Allegheny, where Pittsburgh is located, where I'm sitting right now, does in fact have a larger population.
All right, 3 out of 4 ain't bad. 75%.
3 out of 4.
We'll take that. We'll take that every day.
We learn here.
You come to this podcast for Dayton basketball information, and you learn some population density information while you're at it. See, you're not going to get that anywhere else, folks. You won't.
That's right.
You truly won't. Yeah, as I stated before, I think we need to touch on it a little bit more. Malachi Smith returned to the court on Monday night, and he played very well, scored in double figures, looked very comfortable, defended well, played, you know, full speed, I thought, without any limitation. He entered the game at the 9:58 mark of the first half to a very warm reception from the crowd. And he was a big question mark coming into the season on what are we going to get from him? You know, cause there are basically two diverging paths that I saw. One path was, he comes back motivated, healthy, ready to play, becomes a big contributor. Maybe he starts. Maybe he's one of the first guys off the bench and has a very, very good season and kind of, you know, gets back a lot of that. You know, I don't want to say goodwill because he didn't lose goodwill for getting hurt, but you understand what I'm saying, that just to get back into the spotlight of the fan base, let's put it, because, you know, as you know, he kind of disappeared. He kind of forgot about him once we got into the whole season of last year. He comes into the game. He plays well. I think he's a major, major part of what Dayton wants to do this year. And if he plays well and has a good season and plays like he did in game one throughout the rest of the season, I think it's only going to make Dayton better. A lot of people, you know, it didn't really prove that he's fully back, but it did give you some hope that he possibly could. Just kind of touch on Malley a little bit, Sully, on, you know, what you see from him this year, what his role might be, and, you know, kind of what the high end and the low end of what he could bring.
Yeah, top of the show, I mentioned it, but it does seem increasingly likely that his best role on this team would be a sixth man type of situation, right? And that's how I see it right now on paper, because I don't know if you want him to go back to being the everyday point guard or the starting point guard, right? And frankly, we've seen it work many times over the year, having the dual point guard kind of attack, right? But I always give people hesitancy on what he's going to give this team, because since the day he got injured in the A-10 tournament, which was March of 2022, he has only played in 21 games, including the one that we just had on Monday night. When guys like that are injury prone, they typically stay injury prone. So really my expectations for him, not throwing stones, but they were incredibly low because he's had two surgeries. It is, you know, he's 21, 22 years old. He's in his fourth year in college. It's just, I'm keeping the expectations low because we did kind of find out how to succeed without him last year. So really anything that he can give Dayton moving forward is gravy, because if you remember from his freshman year, he was pretty much an average point guard, probably a little bit above average in the A-10, but when you're playing better teams, he was pretty average. He shot the three ball, I think at 40% or something around there, because he liked to pick his spots. But generally speaking, you were probably going to get, I don't know, 5 assists out of him. Maybe he's going to hit you with a double-double or 10 points rather in any given night. And if you can get that, even that, for Malachi Smith, giving you maybe 10 points every now and again, not turning the ball over and creating 4 or 5 chances, that really is kind of the secret sauce for Dayton, because then you can run 4 guards and you can really start to run a bunch of different looks at people, because Enoch Cheeks is a very versatile kind of guard forward type of guy who has that high motor. He's always going to be, you know, hunting on the glass. And now that Dayton has a little bit of depth in the front court, really what's missing is, do we have depth in the back court? And
right.
And I think that they will, if Malachi stays healthy all year, because, you know, the alternative is we pretty much are just going to be playing Posh Alexander and Bennett, you know, for what, 30 minutes a night.
Yeah.
So I do want to see Malachi kind of be the X factor for this team, because you remember, let's go all the way back to like V Sanford. He was a catalyst for that 2014 team because he was a veteran that had an expanded role the year before. And then they put him in the six man role and he flourished.
Yep.
Because he came in and they didn't lose anything by subbing in. And you remember some of the rotations that we used to run the Archie years and even, you know, some of AG's teams that you pull out some lineups and you go, okay, we just got to hold on for like 2 or 3 minutes. But what you're seeing right now forming is possibly a 3 or 4 man rotation up and down front court and back court. And so I said it, and now I'm actually getting into a little bit more detail about it. But that's what we're talking about when we say this needs to get to the 8-man rotation. We have to figure out who are your 2 primary guards, who's the first guy off the bench, what's your rotation look like down low? Is Letang going to give you like 10 minutes a night in an Isaac Jack type of role, right? And then there's another guy we haven't talked about yet, is Isaac Jack, right? Because we haven't needed to because he's been hurt.
Yep. Lower body injury.
And that's the other thing. It's like we have too many bodies at this point where you absolutely know for a fact the team will look nothing like this January 1st, right? Yeah. So, I think Saturday night's about learning. It's definitely about Malachi Smith. But I think for now, I'm going to stand by it. I think his role on this team, or where he could do the most damage, make the most impact, is being the first guy off the bench.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know Malley personally, and, you know, I'm kind of projecting here, but he doesn't scream to me as a guy that will bitch about his role. He seems to me that he's a very team first kind of guy that will just be like, hey, I'm playing ball again. Like, coach, like, what do you need me to do? What can I do to help the team? And
team
again,
first guy.
Yeah. And again, like, I don't know that to be certain. I'm just projecting from what I've seen, what I've read, what I've heard about the kid. And all accounts say that he's a great teammate. He's a great dude. So, and I do think he's somebody who would be willing to accept coming off the bench and being that sixth man and being that kind of super sub. And you mentioned it, and I did want to touch on this as well, is that Dayton can kind of throw a lot of different variable lineups at you with the players that they have this year. You know, you can kind of go, you can go big, you bring Connor off the bench, and then you can go with Key, Santos, him, you know, Posh and Cheeks. That's legit size on the court.
That's right.
And
what the A-10 can't compete with, right?
Right.
It's very hard.
If you wanted to go small, you could plug, you know, whoever, Zed Key or Santos or Letang at the five, and you could throw Cheeks, Alexander, Bennett, and Malley out there, and all of a sudden you've got ball handlers and screen and roll and a little bit more of an open floor. So I just kind of like how multiple Dayton can be, and I'm talking myself into it. And obviously, again, I'm trying to project what I can see in the future, but not putting it all on the fact that they did it against St. Francis, if that makes any sense.
Like, that's a like, line to toe, my friend.
Right. But I see the vision is what I'm getting at. Like, I can see the vision with the players we have and how the roster is built. Would I like a little more shooting? Like, yeah. Would Kobe Brea be really, really good on this freaking team? Yeah, he would. He was awesome for Kentucky, by the way. It sucked.
Yeah, you know who's actually under Dayton in the KenPom rankings right now? Kentucky. I didn't know he was going to transfer down. Did you?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be that way for much longer. little Kentucky corner here. I watched them, and Grant, they played Wright State, who is, you know, a team that Kentucky should kill, but also like has been pretty good in the Horizon League for a lot of years. They have a good coach, and they just got absolutely bazooka'd out of Rupp with no contest at all. So I think Kentucky's going to be a pretty fun team to watch this year. You know, watch that space. But this isn't a Kentucky podcast. This is a Dayton basketball podcast. That's kind of really all I've got from the St. Francis, and looking forward to, you know, Northwestern. Is there anything I missed? Anything you got? Anything you'd like to add?
No, I mean, the only thing, you know, that is even worth discussing beyond the obvious of 30-point win on night one is that Dayton got a favorable, draw with the computers, or the computers like Dayton very early on in the season. You say, well, not a lot of games have been played. Okay, granted. But just like in college football, when you start winning and everybody else starts losing and you just keep moving up because you haven't lost, it's easier to start from a place of strength when it comes to the college basketball analytics. KenPom likes us a little bit more than Bartorvik, but we're in that 30-40 range. And if you've been following the show for a long time, where Dayton has to be to get into the tournament is always in the top 40 of any metric, of any ranking across the board. So right now you're looking at 30 in KenPom. And then, like I said, if you head on over to Bartorvik, he's got us a lot lower at 64. So those numbers are going to start to kind of even themselves out. But starting favorably with the computers is big because Bartorvik's rankings aren't really indicative of NCAA tournament placements. KenPom's kind of are. And a lot of other rankings fall into place by like where KenPom has teams slotted at. So it's good news for Dayton fans. But at the same time, there's a lot of opportunities for winning, and there's a lot of opportunities to take losses, which is why we said 8-5 doesn't even necessarily kill Dayton this year if it's the right five losses. Right. 9-4 and keep going up from there, and they're going to be in a really good spot. So this is the first leg to kind of see what the team has and what's going to be perceived as must wins, right? Because this is a golden opportunity for a home game early on in the season. And that's why you're going to get those extra two or three betting points that we educated you on earlier in the show. So, you know, get out there, wear red, be loud, have drinks and all that. And let's get it early on. Season win. That's what we need.
That's right. And, you know, kind of thinking about net down the road, this would probably wind up being a Q2 game, if I had to guess, unless, you know, Northwestern has a really, really good season. Then it
seems likely.
If I had to guess where this one will probably shake out, it'll probably be a quad two game. And, you know, those are important. And as I mentioned last year, I was listening back to an old episode, kind of just for research purposes. When Virginia made the tournament last year and how, you know, universally panned it was, they didn't lose the Q4 game. So it just goes to show that the logic of just don't lose the bad ones and you'll keep yourself alive. That's basically
well, that
all.
Happened to Dayton last year too. I mean, they didn't lose a home game, and that helped them when it got down the stretch in A-10 play, because when they stubbed their toe, yeah, it was against George Mason, but they did it on the road, which gives you a certain amount of leniency. So I think over the years, how like all these metrics have kind of shaped how we watch the team, how we look at the team. We've talked about how Dayton's in such a unique position because it's hard for us to get non-con games. And then once we're done, there's very little benefit after the non-cons. So we're very uniquely suited right in between kind of being a mid-major where like none of your games matter and being a high major where the non-conference is basically kind of all for show and figuring out who you are, right? And the games don't have as much weight. So Northwestern's really unique there because they often try to get these opportunities in non-con knowing they're probably going to go like 10-8. And if you go, or I guess there's 20 games in the Big Ten now, Northwestern knowing they're going to go 12-8 or 10-10 in conference play, they schedule these games because if you are 10-10 and you're on the bubble, what can get you into the tournament like a Virginia last year is winning a game at Dayton in November. So that's why I said Dayton will have plenty of opportunities to kind of make up for this one. But for Northwestern, it might be a bigger game for them just because it's on the road. And that really can be that extra thing that gets you onto the right side of the bubble. So, you know, we always try to kind of lay out the ground of like, here's why these games actually do matter way more than you think, because by Christmas time, Dayton's got to have the resume to be able to stand on in order to lose four or five games in the A-10 and be perfectly fine to get in the tournament.
Well said. That's all well said. That's about all we have to talk about on the Dayton basketball front. However, there are a couple other Dayton teams I'd like to shout out here on the program. The Dayton men's soccer team is ranked fifth in the country. I knew they were good. They beat West Virginia at home, who was the number one team in the country. I do remember seeing that. Them being number five really snuck up on me. Head coach Dennis Currier has got the boys playing well. They play Davidson on Friday night in the Atlantic 10 quarterfinals, looking to punch their ticket. I mean, hell, you know, they should win the Atlantic 10 from the looks of it, but even if they don't, they're heading to the tournament. They're the number fifth ranked team in the country. So,
and a little trivia, it would be the first time that Dayton men's soccer ever received an at-large bid. So this is a big time because there's a lot of programs on campus that have been steady, or they've, you know, won here and a little bit there. Men's soccer has always been like a step short, or they've just been not quite that good. So it's really cool to see them take that next step up this year. You know, shout out to the team just putting together an incredible year that all kind of started to pique people's attention when they got that win against West Virginia at home. And yeah, you'd be crazy to not pay attention to it after that. You know, when you win against the number one team at home, I don't care what sport it is. That's amazing.
That's something
like,
to
how
celebrate.
Often does that happen? Yeah, well, it doesn't happen. So
you look at the schedule. They had lost 4-2 to Fordham before that game with West Virginia. They beat West Virginia, the number one team in the country, 5-1. That's the equivalent of winning in basketball by like 30.
Yeah, right. They stomped them.
Then they beat Bonaventure 2-1. They beat Davidson 5-1, who they play in the Atlantic 10 tournament. They beat VCU 2-0. Beat St. Louis 4-1. So they've kind of just ridden that momentum off that win against West Virginia all the way to the A-10 tournament. They play, as I said, they play Davidson on Friday night, 7 p.m. You know, if you're a student, you're on campus listening, go grab a couple beers, head down to Beaujon, watch the fellas play. Come on, what else are you going to do on a Friday night? Go watch the number five ranked men's soccer team in the country play.
And you're right. They started the year 1-1, took a loss August 25th against Jacksonville, and they've lost one game since August 25th. So well,
speaking of
great
of
run losing, the boys are on.
Speaking of only losing one game, the other team I'd like to shout out, who I said before the show to Sully, and he agreed, is probably the most consistent athletic program on that campus, and that would be the UD women's volleyball team. They are 24-1 this season. Their only loss coming to Marquette. They are ranked 19th in the country. Head coach Tim Horsman has got the ladies playing good yet again. I Volleyball was good when I was in school there. They were good when you were in school there. They were good when my oldest brother was in school there. That is about 20 years of coverage where UD women's volleyball has been very, very good. So shout out to them as well. Obviously, you know, we are a Dayton basketball podcast. We talk about basketball on here 99.9% of the time. But when a Dayton team is doing this well and having these good of seasons, it's worth mentioning. It's worth bringing them up. It's worth giving them their shine. And these two programs certainly deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. I did a quick little back through there since I had mentioned to you, you know, the team was very good when I was in school. And that was exactly the case. In 2009, they were 30-4. In 2010, they were 28-4. In 2011, they were 25-7. And then 2012, they were 27-5. And as Drew said, sitting here in 2024, they are 24-1. That is the point of this particular part of the podcast, is just to shout out the women's volleyball team, because they really have been the most consistently successful program on campus for the better part of two decades. And it's awesome. It's great that we've had that volleyball culture, you know, all the way back from the days when the Frerich Center like had no heating and AC and you used to sweat your ass off when school started to go in there and enjoy games. Now it's, you know, just so much better facility than it used to be. And it's because we've had the volleyball culture. We have the great attendance. Red Scare usually shows up in pretty big numbers for big games. So to shout out to the women's volleyball team, if you were following along, I did a little bit of Twitter stuff last year when they got to the NCAA tournament, and will do such again. If you remember, they won the A-10 tournament against Loyola, and then they won a first-round game against Pepperdine before conceding to Washington State on their home floor at a late game on a Saturday night. But it was a fun season to follow, and now in fall sports, we should have two Dayton programs in the NCAA tournament. So shout out.
Women's very exciting. Soccer, always nice when it's volleyball. Always nice when you see Dayton on any kind of bracket and postseason play. Always is. Sully, I think that's about all I got for this evening. You want to deliver me some final thoughts?
No, final thoughts for the evening are simply to get out there on Saturday night, 7:30 tip off against Northwestern, nationally televised game, I believe, and wear red and then be loud.
That's right. He said the rules. My final thoughts are pretty much the same. Get out there, get there early, be loud. You know, juice in UD Arena. There's nothing quite like it. As the man said, there are two rules on this show. They are wear red and they are be loud. We'll see you guys next week, as we recap this one and we preview Ball State and we get inch ever so closer to Hawaii. Until then, we'll talk to you guys next week. Cheers.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.